Welcome everyone to another podcast of Modern World Zen. This is Josh Barzell. So last episode we were talking about the concept of the other. And, you know, it makes one think about the sort of the psychoanalytic other in the dyad, you know, between therapist and patient. But I wasn't really talking about what happens in a therapeutic room, but you could also think about it there. You know, this othering that we do in relationships would also be seen in a therapeutic setting. Certainly in transference, you know, you have a kind of concept like that. So we're going to look at transference because I think it has something to say. So what is transference? Transference is only in the analytic setting. At least that's how we're going to look at it. I think some people think about it as happening elsewhere, but we're going to look at it in the analytic setting. Again, I'm not a psychoanalyst, but what is transference? So transference occurs where the patient develops feelings towards the analyst that aren't really for the analyst. They're sort of for a prior relationship, most likely mother or father. And what happens in the analytic setting is the patient is unaware of the transferring of a prior relationship onto the analyst. So he might love the analyst like he loves his father. He might hate the analyst like he hates his father. He might love the analyst like he loves his mother, or he might hate the analyst like he hates his mother. So there's going to be attraction and repulsion going on. And the job of the analyst, to make this a transference is to bring it to the attention of the patient and say, what are you doing here? Aren't you really doing this? Could this be what's happening? Could you be actually transferring on to me or to me your relationship with your dad, say? And the reason why it's similar to the other is that we don't actually know who we're looking at. We think we're looking at our mother and our father, or we should say we think we're looking at our analyst, but really we're looking at our mother and our father. So this is a way that another way that something you would presumably be the reality is not the reality because of unconscious experience. And there's no way to separate this from conscious experience without the help of someone who's trained to do this, right? I wouldn't be able to do it because I'm not a psychoanalyst, but a psychoanalyst would be able to do it, or should, you know, you'd expect him or her to be able to do it. It's part of their training. It's not exactly that difficult. They're all looking for it. So this can be a similar situation to what we were talking about last episode, which is the concept of the other. Because in this context, when we other someone, when we make someone not a human being, when we make them into some other that does not even have human characteristics that we couldn't possibly love under any circumstance, you can think about it almost as a transference. And the way we thought about it in last episode is we said, oh, okay, let's see if we're not projecting our own flaws onto this person. Maybe this person is doing exactly what we're doing. And instead of seeing it in ourself, sort of unconsciously, right? Instead of seeing it, this unconscious idea in ourself, we're just blindly projecting it onto this other person. So when we become aware of what we're doing, that may not be exactly good, or it could be good. We could hate someone for being good. We could have someone who's being good be an other. And in both cases, like the transference and like this othering, there's something unconscious there that one is not aware of. So generally speaking, what happens is in our lives, we have things that we do habitually. And when we do these things habitually, we may or may not be conscious of what we're doing habitually all the time throughout the day. Some parts of our day, we might be completely unaware that we drink habitually, right? Completely unaware of it. Say, and yet what happens is when we encounter someone, we don't like in 12 steps say, I'm an alcoholic, I'm here, or an AA. We say, oh no, I don't drink. How are you? But we're going to judge that person based upon our habit. So if I drink habitually, I might meet you today and have no conscious awareness that I actually do this behavior. Either I don't think it's bad, or I'm just not in treatment for it, or whatever. I might not even be an alcoholic. This may not have to go to the extreme extent of alcoholism, but alcoholism is a great way, as the extreme case, it's a great thing to look at. So I'm not conscious of my alcoholism when we meet, but I'm going to be judging you based upon that weakness, which is not great to drink habitually, right? There's a lot of studies that say alcohol is actually damaging. It is. It's damaging to the body and the mind and everything else. It causes a lot of problems. It can also lead to severe addiction or alcoholism that can cause death. We know that this is very dangerous. So that weakness of mine that I habitually drink will be unconsciously projected onto you, whether or not you drink or not. So if you take it from the person's perspective who I'm meeting, this person would be like, why is he looking at me? Why is he saying these things? Why is he behaving this way? Because he's projecting his own habituation onto you. And this is also how we can get into trouble in relationships. We may not know we're doing this. So that's another thing we want to look at is, are we aware of the habits we have in relation to our in our relationships, say? And if we were aware of the habits we have in the context of our relationships, it might be kind of beneficial. A great example is a college student who drinks habitually. Very common. 20-year-old college student drinks habitually and is in a relationship also with his or her professor at a college. Now, does the habitual drinking come into the relationship with the professor? Because the relationship with the professor is quite, broad, because the professor has textbooks that the student would read, has assignments that the student would perform. The student wants a good grade from the professor. The professor wants to teach the student and make sure the student has good grades, knowing that not everyone can get an A, in a class that's sort of, scaled. But is the student with this sort of habitual drinking problem, is he or her, is he aware, or is she aware of her drinking problem in the relationship with her academics? Or are those things completely compartmentalized and walled off from one another? Have they split? And you can see that this could be kind of a problem. I think for a lot of cases, students do split these things. But clearly, it would be better to have them integrate into the coursework. So it's not that as I'm telling my prof if I'm a college student who drinks habitually, and I'm not telling my professor that I drink habitually, but at least that becomes consciously a part of the relationship. So a therapist treating a said 20-year-old college student in this would probably say, "What would your professor think? You drink on the weekends. You really love this professor. You say he or she loves you. What would he think? Or what would she think if they knew that you were drinking all the time?" And not only does it shine a light on it, but it helps that relationship because the student otherwise is unconsciously judging not just the professor, but everything that comes out of the professor's mouth. All of the coursework that the professor has offered that the student is reading all comes from this person. That's generally how it is, in college. A lot of the time it isn't. You just sort of like, there's no professor, it's all online. It's sort of like, just read this. But the good classes are still very sort of, they have an intimacy to them. And I think this is true as you grow up in graduate school and more is more and more intimate. So you can see that this could be a really big problem. Just for the, not for the drinking problem. Put that aside. Because we know 20-year-olds drink and, the physical effects probably aren't so bad, mental effects aren't so bad, and most of the time, not every single college student who drinks habitually becomes an alcoholic. So, but the issue that I'm trying to zone in on is what is the projection that the child is doing, or not the child, but the college student, the 20-year-old child, 20-year-old human, man or woman, what is he or she projecting onto the professor because of this habituation? And how is that affecting the student's learning of the material, the absorption in the material, how it infects, well, it is kind of an effect infecting, how it infects all of the child's or the student's entire academic life. Because they're not aware of what they're doing in the context of the choices they make, how they're absorbing the material, and so on. This can lead to problems, clearly. Because the child or the student, I keep saying child, but I mean, we know, 20-year-olds, they many of them are very much like children. But this student is going to make a judgment based on career choice or major or minor, anything, amount of time of studying, what he or she thinks he can do. Everything is going to be decided upon based upon this, unconscious habituation because it's split off. This is something that the student really enjoys doing, drinking, say, and it, but it's split off. So the student might really want to do art class, but is studying physics, and his enjoyment might be in art, but he's studying physics, or his enjoyment might be in physics, but he's studying art. And so this also has to come out. This is similar to the othering, but it's sort of a deeper context, and it has to come out, and it has to be recognized, and it has to be incorporated into what it is that the student is doing. So that they don't have to make a judgment based upon an unconscious or split off habituation like drinking. Because I think that's really what is going to occur in a lot of cases, that they will make the wrong choice. They will make the wrong choice because this habituation is split off. It hasn't entered into the relationship with the student's academic life, and they end up in a place where they don't really like what they're doing. They don't have any enjoyment. They're not do performing well, and on and on and on. So it's something I wanted to bring up, and I think that it's something that we should pay attention to in our own lives. What are we judging? Who are we judging based upon our habitual behaviors? And are we aware of what we're, what has become an habituation? For us, and whether or not we should at least invite it consciously, you don't have to tell the person, but if you should invite it consciously into the relationship, thereby allowing yourself to think more clearly because this is a part of your life, whatever it happens to be, whatever your habitual behavior happens to be, so that maybe you make the right decision. Maybe you make the right judgment. Because if your life is split off and compartmentalized all the time, you may not be able to make a sound, clear judgment about something because you're split off. You have a part of yourself that you're very invested in this habitual behavior, that it's a part of you. And that might be the best part of you, even though it might be wrapped up in an addiction. So if this part of you can get into the, in this case, we use an example of a college student's academic life. If this can get into your quote unquote academic life, your true life, what you're committed to doing, it might actually save you from making a wrong decision or a bad choice based upon what it is that you do for a living. So anyway, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, and you can meditate on this a little bit. I think it's quite helpful to do that. And we will be doing more things in the future. But for now, this is Josh Barzell for Modern World Zen.